Welcome back to Fit Body Happy Joints. My name is Shannon. Today we're talking about if women have to lift heavy. Do women have to lift heavy weights to stay strong, to improve health, and to see body composition changes? In this episode, I'm going to speak primarily to perimenopausal women and postmenopausal women. But if you aren't there yet, maybe you are a woman in her 20s or 30s or 40s, I still want you to listen to this episode so that you can better understand what to do when you approach this age. I think part of the reason that so many women get frustrated at this age is because of the lack of education. I've heard from so many women who have told me, I wish I would have known sooner. I wish I would have known in my 20s what I was going to go through in my 50s so that I could have better prepared myself. And so I could have exercised differently and made better choices for my health. So I want you all to listen to this episode, even if you are not going through that perimenopausal or postmenopausal transition. We all need to be focused on building muscle, or at the very least, maintaining muscle mass. And I actually had a friend who, it's so funny, I try not to talk to my friends about exercise unless they ask me, because, you know, I'm very opinionated. But I had a friend who I was trying to convince her to focus on gaining muscle and not just do like cardio and yoga. And she basically said, like, I'm just not going to worry about that until I, you know, get older and then I lose all my muscle and then I'll focus on it then. And I was really trying to convince her that that was a huge mistake, that building the muscle now, while it's easier to build, is going to set her up for so much of a better experience later in life. And not only that, but I was trying to convince her that she'd probably be happy with her body composition and would feel really good and strong if she did focus on building muscle. But, you know, you win some, you lose some. But I wanted to answer this question for those of you who are not yet peri-postmenopausal. Do you have to lift heavy to see results as far as body composition changes or as far as muscle strength or muscle growth? The answer is no. You do not need to lift heavy to see results. You do need to adequately challenge your muscles for sure. And if you are adequately challenging your muscles and you're getting close to failure at the end of each set, you're eating enough protein, you're challenging each muscle group for about 4-ish sets or maybe more per week, you're giving yourself enough recovery time, you are going to see results. Now, I've talked about this a lot, but studies show that you can use a variety of different loads. You could use heavy loads for light or a few reps, or you could use relatively lighter loads and do longer sets. Both can produce really similar gains as far as strength and hypertrophy. But the current research is suggesting that less than 30% of your one rep max is not sufficient. So if you're going really, really light, it's not sufficient for changing the muscle. So this is why I don't recommend super high rep training where you're doing like 30, 40, 50 reps and you're just kind of searching for the burn, because studies show that it may not be very sufficient for muscle growth or physically changing the muscle. Super high rep training may help with endurance, but most women, like I'm going to talk about in a little bit, already have great muscular endurance. They already have a great composition of type 1 muscle fibers that are your endurance muscle fibers. So that type of training where you're just doing really high reps probably isn't going to do much for the physical appearance and strength of the muscle, even though it may burn. So I think that that's a really important thing to consider. So what I like to choose is about 60 to 80% of your one rep max. And again, there's a wide range. You could go all the way down to 30. You can go really light. But I like to recommend this, like at least 60% of your one rep max range, because it makes the sets not so long that you feel like you're going forever and ever, and it makes your workouts really long. So if you are lifting a little bit heavier and challenging the muscle a little bit more with that like 60 to 80% of your one rep max weight, this means maybe you're doing like a set for 60 to 90-ish seconds. And towards the last few seconds, the last few reps of that set, you're getting within 3 to 4 reps of failure. So you don't have to lift super heavy to see muscle growth, but at the same time, super, super light load training may not be providing the stimulus to physically change the muscle. So that's for those of you who are not peri and postmenopausal. You do not have to lift super heavy in order to see muscle growth and to see results and get stronger. So my quest for today's podcast was to more focus on the peri and postmenopausal woman. I really wanted to discover if this same philosophy could be applied to peri and postmenopausal women. So I've heard experts, and maybe those of you listening have also heard similar advice, recommend that women, especially women who are approaching menopause, that they lift heavier weights for less reps. So think heavy lifts using compound exercises like a deadlift for like 6 or fewer reps. I've heard experts actually discourage hypertrophy training, which is what I just kind of described, which is generally a little higher rep and lower weight. Like, you know, again, the rep range can vary a lot, but it might be more like 15 reps rather than 6 reps, and the weight is a little bit lighter, but you're still getting close to that failure point. So I've heard experts discourage hypertrophy training and encourage the strength-focused training, which is the generally the heavier weight and lower reps. So this recommendation is based on the idea that your hormones are changing as you age, and therefore your skeletal muscle mass and strength are changing as well. So because you're getting these changes in your body, the recommendation is to lift heavier because you need a strong stimulus in order to gain more muscle and strength to improve body composition and functionality as you age. But this was kind of confusing to me, and I have a lot of questions about this that I want to explore and challenge a little bit in this episode, because women are losing muscle as we age. I'm going to talk about this in a little greater detail in a moment, but this muscle loss tends to accelerate as we approach menopause due to hormonal changes. So if hypertrophy is discouraged, it's a little confusing to me, because wouldn't we want to focus on hypertrophy to preserve and hopefully gain muscle mass to offset those body composition changes that tend to happen when we approach menopause? And wouldn't gaining muscle mass improve body composition? So I didn't fully understand why heavy lifts were being recommended and why moderate lifting or hypertrophy training was being discouraged. So does this mean that hypertrophy training isn't effective for women who are close to menopause? Because from everything I've studied, hypertrophy training will also increase strength. Study after study have shown this, even in studies with perimenopausal women as subjects. So it's all very confusing to me. In fact, recent literature shows that lifting lighter weights done for longer reps can produce similar gains in both hypertrophy and strength. And I'll link a great paper in the show notes that was just published this month, May of 2023, that talks about how, again, you can see hypertrophy and strength in a really similar way with heavy loads and with lighter loads. As long as you are lifting more than 30% of your one rep max, like I talked about earlier, and you're taking each set close to failure, you'll really see comparable gains in strength and size of the muscle, whether you're lifting super heavy or whether you're lifting relatively light. So when you're lifting lighter loads for more reps and you're seeing muscle growth, you're also increasing strength. You can't fully separate strength and hypertrophy, which was the old way to view strength training. We thought that low reps built strength and higher reps built muscle, but not a lot of strength. But current research supports that really there's this wide variety of loads and rep schemes that can improve both strength and muscle mass in a really comparable way, and that it isn't black and white. You're not going to separate strength from hypertrophy. Anytime you're challenging a muscle, you're going to see both strength gains and hypertrophy or muscle mass gains, regardless of if that's a really heavy weight or if that's a relatively lighter weight. Again, I'm kind of repeating myself, but I think that this is important to understand. So then I thought, all right, I'm not really sure why hypertrophy training is being discouraged, or that more moderate weight, as long as it's taken close to failure and it's growing muscle. I'm not really sure why we aren't suggesting that women train like that as they approach menopause. So then I thought, okay, maybe the heavy lifting with fewer reps is being suggested because the challenge to the muscle is greater in the first couple of reps when you're lifting heavy with low reps. But again, in a hypertrophy routine, you're still getting significant stimulus and challenge to the muscle. It's just that it's in the last few reps of your set rather than in the first couple of reps of your set. So when you approach that failure point and you're using, you know, you're doing higher reps, but you're using lighter weight, but you're approaching that failure point towards the end of your set, you recruit large muscle fibers. And when you recruit those larger muscle fibers, because you're putting in a lot more effort and stimulus towards the end, those muscle fibers will grow bigger and stronger. So just because the rep scheme is different, again, it doesn't mean there isn't a significant challenge and stimulus to the muscle. So that didn't fully make sense to me either. So I also know from a mechanical perspective that muscle growth happens with mechanical overload, but mechanical overload doesn't have to come from lifting heavy barbells. And I've been doing this on my Instagram a lot lately, kind of comparing two different exercises and comparing the mechanical load to a muscle with one exercise and then the other. Mechanical load can happen even with bodyweight exercise. And when you're getting sufficient mechanical load to a muscle, that's when a muscle will grow bigger and stronger. For example, again, I did this on my Instagram recently, if you want to see a visual for this, but a bodyweight sissy squat where your knees are kind of traveling forward and your trunk is leaning back will provide more mechanical load to the quads than, let's say, like a front squat where your knees are staying relatively over your ankles or heels and they're not passing over your toes. Even if you're using a heavier weight in a front squat than you are in a bodyweight sissy squat, the load to the quads, the mechanical load to the quads will still be greater in the bodyweight sissy squat, even if you're using lighter weight. And this is because there's a longer moment arm to the knee. In other words, your knee travels further from your center of gravity, which requires more work from the quad in order to lift you back to center. So just because you're lifting lighter weights doesn't necessarily mean the muscle is getting less of a challenge. And this can really be applied with so many different exercises. So the number on the dumbbell does matter. I'm not saying don't lift heavy. I'm not saying that you should only do bodyweight exercises. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that what matters the most is the challenge to the muscle. And that doesn't necessarily come in the form of lifting super heavy dumbbells and just throwing weight around. To me, muscle growth is about challenging muscles. And we have to look at mechanics in order to understand how we can challenge muscles while limiting stress to the rest of our body. To me, muscle growth and improving body composition has always come down to the challenge to the muscles, not necessarily about the amount of weight that you're throwing around. And I think a lot of, you know, the fitness industry has not been taught to look at exercise in this kind of physics mechanical way. Another consideration that I had is that if heavy lifting at low reps is being recommended for women, what about their joint health? I personally would not recommend a woman who is in their 50s, who has never deadlifted before, just go into the gym and start doing heavy deadlifts for the first time for 6 reps with heavy weight. Now, I don't think that most experts would recommend that either. I think that we would all collectively agree that doing, you know, deadlifts for the first time without supervision and throwing around a bunch of weight is not recommended. I think that we would really like to see people who are applying this work with a experienced trainer who can help them progress and move appropriately through these exercises. So I think that's an important consideration as well, is do these women have access to an experienced trainer who they can work with? And what about the women that don't have access to an experienced trainer or don't want to do heavy lifts for one reason or another? Maybe they are intimidated by a gym environment. Maybe they don't have access to heavy weights. Maybe they don't enjoy lifting heavy. Like, I never enjoyed it. Or maybe they've tried to follow this advice with lifting heavy and it hasn't felt good on their joints or whatever. And what about all the women who are in peri and postmenopause who are EVLO members and they're seeing great body composition changes and they're gaining strength? We aren't lifting super heavy weights using all compound movements, and yet these women are still seeing changes while avoiding overstressing their joints. So I had all of these questions and challenges that I truly just wanted to understand. I wanted to understand if there was something I was missing, because I either wanted to adapt the EVLO programming to fit these recommendations, or I wanted to recommend that women who are in peri-postmenopause maybe look elsewhere for their training other than EVLO, if it was something that was going to be better for them. So I genuinely want people to be successful, truly, truly, truly. And if that means that my recommendations and my content and EVLO is not the best fit for someone, I really want you all to have that information so that you can make choices that work best for you. And I also want you all to know before I get into this that if I'm wrong on this or if there's something that I'm missing, I will absolutely correct myself. That to me, it's not about being right or wrong. It's about seeking to understand the options, present them to you, and help you make decisions that are going to be the most effective and sustainable for you. So if I'm misunderstanding things and there's new learnings that clarify things in a different way, please know that I will be back on this podcast to correct myself and explain those things. So please know that that will be coming if necessary. So let's get into this. I dug into the science to understand why or if it's so important for women to transition from a hypertrophy routine where maybe they're doing a little higher rep, a little lower weight, to a program where they're using more weight, they're lifting heavier weight, but they're doing fewer reps, which is more of a strength focused routine classically. So let's talk about this. Let's back up and talk briefly about peri and postmenopause and some changes that are happening, because I think this is important to understand so that we can ultimately understand the why behind this recommendation. So perimenopause is about the 5-year runway leading up to menopause. And menopause is a singular date in time that marks 12 months of no period. So there's perimenopause, which is kind of that 5-year runway where changes start happening. And then there's postmenopause, which is all of the time after that singular date in time, that menopause date where there that marks 12 months of no period. So during perimenopause, this is when things start shifting for women. There's a decrease in estrogen and progesterone, as well as some other hormonal shifts. And these shifts have different effects on your body, various different effects. I'm not going to get into all of that today. But one of those marked effects is an acceleration in muscle loss, particularly loss of type 2 muscle fibers. These type 2 muscle fibers, which I've talked about in the podcast before, are your powerful, they're your larger muscle fibers that are responsible for producing strong muscular contractions. They also make up more of the mass of the muscle, so they are crucial to stimulate in your training and hopefully build during this transition so that you can kind of offset a lot of the body composition changes and loss of muscle that happens during this time. So in contrast, women tend to keep, and really all aging people tend to keep, a better composition of type 1 muscle fibers. Type 1 muscle fibers are your smaller muscle fibers, and they're your endurance fibers. These are stimulated with, like, think your endurance activities, like longer walks or bike rides, jogging, and some, not all, like Pilates or yoga or bar type workouts where, again, you might be burning muscles and you might be doing that really, really high rep training like I was talking about earlier, but you're never really getting close to failure. So those are the type of workouts that are really stimulating those type 1 muscle fibers. And since we keep such a good composition of type 1 muscle fibers, that's the training that it's not bad or wrong, but it really shouldn't be the emphasis. We really want to work on preserving those type 2 muscle fibers. So to preserve and hopefully increase the size and strength of your muscles, especially those type 2 muscle fibers, it's critical to, number one, gain as much muscle as possible while you are in your 20s and 30s and 40s so that you're really set up for a good foundation during this time. And then number two is, if you are during this time, the perimenopause or your postmenopause, strength train and sufficiently challenge your muscles during this time to preserve and hopefully gain more muscle mass, which can, again, improve the composition of your body. Improving your muscle mass will improve your body composition. And you really do have the power to slow these effects that happen with aging and maybe even reverse some of the effects, because it's truly never too late and you can absolutely gain muscle during this time if you're giving your muscle the proper stimulus. Of course, remember that it's never just about training. How you eat, how you fuel is also equally, if not more, important. So although I'm just going to focus on the training aspect, please, please know that body composition changes do not happen without nutritional changes. So that's really important as well. One of the symptoms of perimenopause, alongside a loss of estrogen, is not just the loss of lean mass, but it's also a decrease in the contractile strength of the muscle that you do have. So in the muscle cell themselves, there are estrogen receptors that stimulate the muscle to contract, which moves your limbs. So since estrogen is lower, strength of the muscle fibers that you have and ability for them to contract is also lower. So your muscle mass is declining, but your strength is also declining with this decline in hormones. So the idea is to stimulate the muscle enough to offset those changes in muscle strength So you want a really strong muscular stimulus. You want to stimulate as many fibers as possible within your resistance training routine. This is why, from my understanding, that there is this recommendation to lift a heavy weight that requires a strong muscular contraction from your muscles. Because your nervous system will recruit more muscle fibers based on the perception of need. If your nervous system is like, okay, I can't do this with just my type 1 muscle fibers. They're too small. They're not strong enough. I need to tap into my type 2 muscle fibers to complete this movement. So when that happens, your nervous system recruits your type 2 muscle fibers, and this creates a strong stimulus for your body to lay down new muscle and increase your strength. So I can totally get on board with why, and I can see where this is coming from, of why the recommendation would be to lift heavier weights so that you get that increased stimulus. You have a strong stimulus for your body to recruit those larger muscle fibers so that you can continue to improve the muscle strength and size. I'm also not saying that this is not effective. I absolutely believe that lifting heavy weights will be effective for both strength and hypertrophy. So I don't want anyone to hear me wrong or think that I'm discouraging that. But from all of the research that I've done and read and everything I've learned, you don't have to lift heavy weights with low reps to create a strong stimulus that will recruit those type 2 muscle fibers. Because the most recent literature suggests that what's important is the challenge to the muscle, not the number on your dumbbell or the number of reps that you complete. And again, I'm going to put this paper in the show notes, but given the most recent literature on muscle growth, the last few reps of your set are the most important part. They should be challenging. Again, you'll hear us say this in Evlo all the time. We want you to get to the point where you're nearing muscle failure, which means you were like 3 or 4 reps shy of not being able to complete another rep with good form. So towards the end of the set, what this will look like is your velocity decreases. So you really slow down. You almost feel like you might get like stuck in the middle of the range of motion. Your effort really increases during this time. You'll feel your heart rate rise and you have to work a lot harder to complete the movement, to complete the rep. So studies show that these last few reps do engage your type 2 muscle fibers, the more powerful muscle fibers, which you are losing as you age, specifically in perimenopause. But the old theory is that lighter loads done for longer periods of time or lighter loads for more reps don't stimulate those type 2 muscle fibers. They're only stimulating your type 1 muscle fibers. And this was something I was taught years ago, and I was actually confused about until recently, where literature is spelling it out more clearly, that this is not the case. We initially thought that this was true because studies were using EMG as a way to measure muscle activation. Sorry, this is going to be a little nerdy for those of you that like the technical stuff. I'm going to get into this. For those of you who don't, you can zone out for a second. I'll cue you when to come back. But so EMG actually is not shown to be the best way to determine which fiber types are being recruited, because EMG is studying the electrical activity of a muscle, but it isn't measuring what's happening on more of a cellular level. So a different technique was recently used to study the metabolic properties of the muscle after resistance training with different loads. This is actually a more precise way to measure what muscle fiber types were recruited, because it's taking a muscle biopsy and measuring what happens cellularly in the muscle cell. So this technique is called fiber type specific glycogen depletion. And glycogen is the primary source of energy for a muscle when it nears failure. So when you're getting close to that failure point, your body will utilize glycogen in your muscle cells to power the rest of your movement. So this technique measures how much glycogen was depleted in any specific muscle fiber. So it's a really good way to kind of reliably assume that a certain muscle fiber was activated and recruited and used because of how depleted it was of glycogen. So this can really help measure and differentiate if type 1 muscle fibers or type 2 muscle fibers were recruited in a given exercise. So this ends up being more reliable than EMG studies. So what studies are showing is that glycogen depletion happens in both type 1 fibers and type 2 fibers at both high loads and low reps, so heavy weightlifting, and at both low loads with high rep, so more of a hypertrophy type of routine, given that the exercise is getting close to failure. Okay, so if you tuned out, come back to me. I'll kind of go over the translation of this. What does this mean? It means that you don't have to lift heavy to recruit those large, powerful muscle fibers that you lose as you age. You don't have to lift super heavy weights in order to tap into your type 2 muscle fibers. We once believed that lower loads were not effective for strength and hypertrophy, but we now know that that's not true. As the muscle fatigues during a set, activation of larger muscle fibers occur. So the smaller muscle fibers, the type 1 muscle fibers, kind of take a back seat as the muscle starts to fatigue, and the larger type 2 muscle fibers that we tend to lose as we age swoop in to take over as fatigue increases. So if you're doing 3 sets of 20, let's say, with moderate weight, and your 20th rep is not challenging at all, you're just ticking a box. You're like, yeah, it burns, but like I could have done like 10 more. It's true that you're probably not going to see much change in the muscle because you aren't challenging that muscle very sufficiently at all. You're not calling on those larger muscle fibers to complete the movement. But let's say you're doing 3 sets of 20 reps, and reps 16 through 20 are very challenging. You're slowing down. You're struggling to complete the movement. You almost feel like you get that like stuck feeling halfway. You are likely recruiting a large portion of the muscle, including those powerful type 2 muscle fibers that we once thought were only recruited when we lift heavier weights for lower reps. If you're an Evola member, you know that we're constantly encouraging you to get close to that failure point. And if in class you're not there, we always say, just let the video play, keep going, take a few more reps until you are close to that point. And the current literature supports that getting close to failure, regardless of the load, as long as it's not too light, like I talked about earlier, is what will drive muscle growth in both type 1 and type 2 muscle fibers. Okay, so what's the bottom line of all of this? What are the takeaways? So from all of my research and my current understanding of this, challenging your muscles is crucial for all women, but especially in that peri and postmenopausal transition. And if you aren't there yet, take this time in your life to build up your muscle tissue so you will have a smoother transition when you do get there. The recommendation of lifting heavy may be coming from previous understanding about muscle growth and strength, and that lighter loads don't stimulate those large muscle fibers, which recent studies are showing isn't quite the full picture. Recent studies are showing that, yes, although we are losing type 2 muscle fibers as we age, we can still use relatively light loads. And as long as we are getting close to that failure point, we can still stimulate those larger muscle fibers and see changes in muscle growth and strength. So from my interpretation, and again, I will absolutely correct myself if I'm interpreting this incorrectly, as long as those last few reps are significantly challenging and you're approaching failure, you can lift lighter loads, even body weight. Again, if the mechanics are sufficiently challenging the muscle, you can use relatively light weights and still see changes in muscle size and strength, even in peri and postmenopause. You might be asking, what about compound lifts? Is there magic to compound lifts? Do I have to be doing compound lifts with heavy weights to get stronger? And the answer is no. Compound lifts, of course, are not bad or wrong and absolutely can increase strength and muscle mass, particularly in the lifts that you are practicing. But non-compound lifts that are targeting muscles rather than movements, kind of like what we focus on in Evlo, like we focus on one muscle group at a time instead of a lot of muscle groups at once, will also produce strength gains and will transfer to strength in your everyday life. Because again, challenging muscles is the idea. We want to challenge those larger muscle fibers, which can be done with both compound lifts as well as using more targeted lifts. So I just want us to think less about the exercise itself, less about the movement, and more about the muscle and how the muscle is being challenged and recruited. Now, please remember, this is all my perspective based on the studies that I've read, what I've learned, my experience with working with hundreds of different people, and how I've interpreted all this data. But to know what's going to work best for you, I highly recommend you experiment for yourself. As long as you're doing so in a safe environment, if you've been training for a while and you're eating enough protein and you're following a well-structured program like Evlo and you aren't seeing results, and even though you're getting close to that failure point at every set, maybe try increasing your weight and dropping down the reps a little bit. As long as you aren't rushing into it and you're progressing appropriately, try tinkering with that. And the key is for you to find what works in your body. I will also say that the current literature is really not very clear on this topic as it pertains to this group of people, so peri and postmenopause. I did do a ton of digging and I still didn't find super clear-cut answers. So my hope is that there'll be some research coming out soon that directly measures the differences of using light loads close to failure and using heavy loads close to failure. I would love to see a large cohort study that uses fiber type specific glycogen depletion to measure the recruitment of type 1 and type 2 fibers in perimenopausal women. So if you're a researcher and you're looking for a new topic, that would be a great one. I think we would all be very grateful to see the results from that. So again, just to sum everything up, from all my research that I've done, I really don't think there is reason to believe that you have to lift heavy to stay healthy, to improve hormone health, to improve body composition, to improve bone density, all those things. We ultimately have to consider the cost and reward. If you feel like you can lift heavy in a safe way and you enjoy it and you're loving it and you're seeing results and you're able to stay consistent, by no means do I want to discourage you from doing that. What's most important is your adherence. If you hate lifting heavy, if it routinely bothers your joints, if you can't stay consistent, what is the point? So if lighter loads can produce similar outcomes and you're more likely to stay consistent, I think you're going to see better results and you're going to feel better doing a routine that you can stay consistent to. So hope this episode was helpful and clarifying. And that is it. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you all next week. Same time, same place. Bye for now.